Mini episode 1001 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 1001. And as befits a mini episode of this stature, we have a couple of longtime FDH Lounge dignitaries, close personal friends of the show. We are going to be recapping the 2018 upfronts and new fronts. Every year we do that, taking a look ahead to the fall TV schedule, and ultimately the way things go these days, TV is really a year-round kind of a deal. The networks and some of the cable channels as well will kind of steer things to the fall, but it's a year-round kind of a deal, particularly when you're looking at some of the streaming services out there and a lot of the cable services, especially the premium ones. Things will debut at any point in time during the year, but this is just a good chance to take a look at the overall landscape, as we do for television every year. Two guys that we've been putting together to do this for a long time. We've had them together for a number of entertainment subjects. First, our good friend Simon Applebaum from Media Village. And again, right there at his Media Village page, that is also the hub for his show Tomorrow Will Be Televised. You can get the link right there from that, which is a multi-platform show, much like the technology and the industries that he covers. So, Simon, as always, a pleasure to have you back on, my man. Thanks so much for making time.
It's a great pleasure, Rick. A lot is happening in the world of television, and since we last spoke about a year or so ago, we've had a lot of wonderful success. We're now on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. We're also simulcasting our show live on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker Mondays and Fridays at 3 o'clock Eastern, New Pacific. We're also doing a three-episode week each month, which that's what we're doing this final week of June, final week of the first half of the year. And I'm happy to say that we're getting a lot of super guests from all over the map. A very exciting time for television.
Yeah, exactly. You've always got a great run of guests, and you always make the most of them, Simon. So, yeah, that's definitely something that people who enjoy thought-provoking discussion about today's television and technology fields should check out, and particularly where TV and technology merge. And also, a gentleman who writes and covers a whole host of subjects, be it sports, be it entertainment. You can catch him in the Queen's Chronicle and many other fine publications out there as well. A gentleman who is a CPA to boot. You name it, this guy can talk about it, and that's what we love in the FDH Lounge. Our good buddy, Lloyd Carroll, the bane of the New York press conference media scene. How are you, my friend?
Well, thanks, Rick and Simon. Good to be tag teaming with you, as you say, in the wrestling business. So we could be doing this again.
Well, how fitting, because they just put Team Hell No back together on SmackDown, Daniel Bryan and Kane, so perhaps that is our version. I'm not sure which of you would be which, but it's...
Daniel Bryan's back. I thought he was retired. I guess Kane will be fine. He'll be doing this till he's 90.
Well, he's going to have a heart...
Let's not forget, Rick, that it's happening also as Fox has picked up SmackDown and USA keeps Raw.
Well,
so, they're breaking up that little gang of the WWE, but WWE is the stock is rising if you have that stock because of some new deals that they've made.
Well, they are, and again, I'm just going to be putting this out there that, as has been reported, as I had seen months ago in the wrestling media, while I don't talk to my friend about shop, I don't like to do that because I don't like to take advantage of our friendship. But it was reported a while ago that there was a new head writer on SmackDown, and I'm not even exactly sure who it is. My good friend and former SportsTalkNetwork.com colleague Ryan Ward not helming that show anymore as head writer, and the quality has gone down in the time since. So, Vince, if you want to give Fox their $1 billion worth or whatever they're paying you, put my man back in charge by the fall of 2019, and that'll get it done. There's my plug for my friend out of the way, but...
Rick, you may want to have him talk to Rob Wade, who's the head of Fox's reality programming, and I have a feeling the wrestling may fall into his purview, so maybe that's not a bad way to go.
Well, exactly. And you know what? Again, I'm biased. I'm incredibly biased. He's a good friend and a heck of a guy, but it's a thing, too. Again, a tremendous, tremendous mind for the business. And he was NXT. I don't, you guys probably, I'm sure, don't follow this as closely as I do, but their developmental territory that really sort of started to take off as its own entity right around 2013 and then 2014 on the WWE Network. He was there when it was the glory days of it, when it was, and it's going pretty strong again right now, but he was doing a lot with not much in the way of previously utilized talent. And again, the guy's a genius, and if he's not running that show, it's a waste. And there we go. I got my biased plug out of the way.
But
I want to watch better television as well, so I'm also being selfish. I watch better TV when Ryan Ward is the head writer of a show. So, you know, I want to enjoy television like everybody else. And on that line here, we get to the upfronts and the new fronts. And again, you know, I'll start with you, Simon, because your coverage of it on MediaVillage.com, where everybody can find this, you had covered many of the different events. You've got the new fronts, which typically tend to be a little bit earlier in that season and kind of roll through the upfronts. In recent years, I know there's been more consolidation in terms of like NBC Universal packaging a bunch of theirs together, but some of these things remain the same from year to year, whether it be big-time MCs up there, whether it be, you know, like Jimmy Kimmel or Kenny Mayne and some of the eats. My favorite one in one of your columns, Simon, was shrimp empanada, lightly spiced corn, and liquid nitrogen fruit popcorn. So, quite a scene, Simon.
Yes, people love the cuisine, but we let them know, we have to put the disclaimer in that it doesn't count in the final stats.
That's right.
Actually awarded.
You're a better man than I am.
Absolutely, Lloyd. But to sort of put in some context about what happened with the upfronts, the new fronts this year, you have to see what the landscape is. And the landscape definitely has altered and transformed in the last year. When I celebrated 10 years of my program last August, I declared on our first episode that we're now living in three eras of television. The era of plentiful, not speak, plentiful television, scripted and unscripted, all over the place. We're living in the era of diverse television, more diversity than ever before, all sorts of places, and more on the way, by the way. And third, and I think most important, we are living in the era of smart TV. Smart TV sets and smart TV devices. I'm talking in the latter category about Roku, Apple TV, Google Chromecast, Amazon Fire TV, NVIDIA Shield, Touch Jet Wave, etc. The latest research shows that at least two-thirds, maybe even 75% of all U.S. households have these sets and devices. The prices are going down. What you can do with these sets and devices has gone up. The usage level is skyrocketing among all demographic categories. Women, people of color, they are using them in major amounts. Whether it is hours per day, days per week, days per month. But the big thing is, and this is the consensus that really came out from the upfronts, and particularly the new fronts, is this. This is how people are watching the new forces in television. Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Sony Crackle, CBS All Access, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're not watching on the personal computer. They're not watching on the smartphone. They're not watching on the tablet. They're watching on the television set. And two other things are happening as well. First, we are now seeing a new group of television services using these smart sets and devices not only as their major distribution point to the viewer, but maybe the exclusive distribution point. Much like when cable started with cable systems with open channel capacity, you saw CNN, Nickelodeon, Showtime, et cetera, fill the gap. More than a decade ago, digital transition, you had those extra channel space, the multicast channels filled the gap. Now we're seeing with smart TV sets and devices, where we don't know what the ultimate channel capacity or capability is, you are seeing a new breed of television services like Afro Live TV trying to be the Netflix of African-American television. On our show today, we had Bizversity, which is trying to be the Netflix of business television. There's Reverie for the gay and lesbian community. Butch Hartman of Fairly Odd Parents fame, who I had on my show this past Monday, he's working on a project called Oaxis Entertainment, which is out to be family-friendly programming, which would include the ability of producers to upload their own content for the benefit of everybody. But something else is also happening too, which I think is very critical for how these upfronts and new fronts go, if not this year, certainly years to come, which is that artificial intelligence is being built into these sets and devices at a fast clip. We're talking Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant, Bixby with Samsung. and the TV set with your voice. And that may be removing the last barrier to having interactive content, interactive television, merchandising, and advertising. And the advertising community is starting to pay attention. They are starting to talk it up. It's still not being talked in the way it ought to be. I think journalists, frankly, are bypassing the subject of smart sets and devices. You're not seeing this being discussed at TV industry panels or places like CE Week last week. So those are farce when it came to showcasing what these sets and devices can do. And this is a subject that we all have to pay attention to. And I think the ad community is starting to do that. And I think you're going to see the impact of Netflix and Hulu and so forth being put to bear on what networks people buy, what services they don't buy, and also whether or not we see the broadcast networks and the major cable networks start to trim the ad loads, where we see less commercial time and more content time.
Very interesting. And you're right that the media is not hitting that hard enough, Simon, but again, people can go back and check the tapes from the history of this show. Every year we've had you on talking about, whether it be at this time of year or really whenever you're talking TV and technology, you're always dropping some real good nuggets like that in there. And that's certainly something I was unaware of in terms of how close some of the artificial intelligence stuff is getting to TV. And that is going to be very interesting to keep an eye on. But Lloyd, as I turn to you to look at this, you know, as befits someone who is a CPA, I know a lot of times in your coverage, whether it be TV or whether it be sports or entertainment or whatever, you're a lot of times obviously honing in, and I say this as a weekly voracious reader of your columns, on the financial aspect here and what draws dollars and cents. You always seem to be drawn to that for subject matter. So as you're looking at the landscape of TV right now, coming off of these upfronts here in terms of where they're gearing for the fall, what are some of the things that you're seeing from your mindset of looking at it in terms of obviously what the networks and the advertisers think will draw money?
Well, it's funny. I want to get Simon's thoughts on this. With the success of This Is Us, it was amazing how many knockoffs we saw, particularly the broadcast. So that's at the bit where most of my attention was this year. Simon may be more up on some of the cables. But I saw, for example, ABC putting A Million Little Things, which is like This Is Us set in Boston with the actor Ron Livingston in the lead. That was
Rachel
one.
Clark, by the way, from Y5O, just signed on to be in the cast.
Sorry, who was that?
Grace Park, the former co-star for Y5O, earlier today announced that she is joining that cast in a cast change.
There you have it. It's funny that there's been a lot of those, Simon, of casting changes. There's the show that we saw at CBS, The Neighborhood, starring Cedric the Entertainer, which I was, here's something I know you've been very big on, is diversity. And so CBS is really going all out this year, not just on this show, but a number of other shows. I mean, Damon Wayans as a CPA trying to get hit with a young guy. It was kind of a strange show, but there was a show called The Neighborhood with Cedric the Entertainer. Simon, did you see any of the trailers on that at all? Did you catch that?
I did. I think the show was called Welcome to the Neighborhood.
Welcome to the Neighborhood. There you go. Yeah, and you know what? It's kind of, it has a kind of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner in reverse, where it's, gentrification, where the white couple moves into the African-American neighborhood, and which is kind of a timely topic. I don't know, but here's the risk that I saw on that show with Senator Dana Hayner. I thought they had him in the George Jefferson role, but kind of, I just wonder if that's a smart play. I mean, I can only judge for 5 minutes, and maybe I'm being unfair, but in a trailer situation, it kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies. It was almost like the jokes were predictable. Is there enough to make a series out of it? And they were seeing a lot of uncomfortable laughs. So I was just curious if you had seen that, what your thoughts were.
No, I haven't. So I don't want to sort of speculate on it. I can tell you this. I think CBS has been trying the last year or so to get more diverse. I thought one of the big moves last year was SWAT, bringing that show back. I thought Jamar Moore was wonderful. They had a great cast. I thought Short Ryan being part of the program. And by the way, they had a graduate of CBS Diversity Program as an executive producer who's African-American. I met him at the New York Television Festival last year. Was very impressed with his work on the show. Happy that CBS renewed it. It's the number one time, came to be the number one show on broadcast television on Thursday nights at 10 o'clock. I think CBS, also with CBS All Access, has been trying to push diversity, a la Star Trek Discovery. And now Alex Kurtzman is going to be doing more Star Trek shows for that service, and you're going to see, for example, Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone, reviving that series. with his Monkey Paw production company. I think CBS has definitely gotten the word that in this day and age, you have to be more diverse. And I think
that
message too. You must, as we get more multicultural and we become a multicultural nation, multiracial nation, you have to reflect the society with your shows.
Well, I was in Los Angeles last year. It was the first time I ever did the Television Critics Association. And when Tom Sherman and Kelly Kahl kind of took the stage at the Beverly Hilton, they were pelted with questions about diversity. It kind of reminded me of watching Sarah Huckabee Sanders get pelted by the White House press corps. It was not a pleasant thing to watch. They hailed it as well as they could, but I think they certainly got the message.
Yeah. And something else also about the upfront this year. There were not as many upfront events in public. And I did ask an ad agency executive about this because, I mean, one of the things that hit me was I think there were networks that either, A, should have done an upfront event, or B, what happened to some of the networks that either, A, had upfront events in the past and didn't show up, or were tied into parent events? For example, with NBC Universal, you heard very little about USA and what they were doing, or Sci-Fi and what they were doing. I thought Freeform was very ill-served by them being involved for the first time with ABC rather than doing their own upfront event. And I think it did hurt, because Freeform, a week later, did their own event to the press, which, unfortunately, some people were invited, some people were not. Their AMC, which had done a public event for IFC, a very good one, at a terrific restaurant called Upland. Check out their pizza, it's marvelous. But they didn't do one for AMC here in New York. They did one in Chicago, but they didn't do one here in New York. And AMC last week did a half-day of events featuring the cast and production teams of their various shows, including The Walking Dead. And again, some members of the media were invited, some members were not. I do like the idea, by the way, of networks doing all-day or half-day events. Netflix did one last spring for many of their new shows at the time. I'd love to see them do it again. If you do it, though, I think you have to invite the full press corps in New York in. Why? Because upfront events have come to be in public a conduit, a way for the public to know what these networks are doing. And while advertising agencies, for example, did get to hear what Viacom networks like BET and Comedy Central and Paramount Network, formerly Spike TV, are doing, the public did not. For example, here we are near end of June. Do you know what the Paramount Network is going to do after this week? Yellowstone, by the way, despite bad reviews with Kevin Costner in his first TV series role, did very well, by the way, like 5 million viewers live and since. But Paramount Network, that I thought was going to do an upfront event, did not. BET, which I thought was a major mistake on their part, did not do an upfront event, despite the fact they had 5 new series to showcase, and a very good new series, I think it's been underreported, called In Contempt, by former LA Law and Order writer Terry Kopp. You wish that more of these events, if they weren't doing a public event and just do private agency stuff, do something for the media. Let us know what's going on so we can let the public know what's going on.
Well, I agree with you 100%, Simon. I've noticed a trend, even a more press-friendly. Part of it's corporate culture. For example, you didn't mention the A&E networks. They've always been like the North Korea of television networks when it comes to working with the press. Viacom is heading, unfortunately, in that direction. Part of it might be because of the corporate problems, the corporate suite. They don't want the press around asking Bob Bakish, why is your company so screwed up, and why does Leslie's Moonves want to stay the heck away from you? I have a feeling that may have something to do with it, too. I know Nickelodeon had something. They did not invite me. They didn't want me near there. I don't know what the reason was, but that's okay. I don't take it personally. But you're 100% right. More of these networks are getting less press-friendly. And here's the weird part. Rick, you're asking me about the dollars and cents.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, this is penny-wise and pound-foolish because it's a very competitive marketplace. You just heard Simon reel off all the entertainment options that are out there for the public. We just skimmed the surface. So anytime you're turning press down, you are making a grave mistake. I remember talking to Bonnie Hammer at the NBC Universal holiday party. And I said to her, Bonnie, why are you getting this short shrift yet? You should get that Thursday afternoon back. You were the grand finale. You put everybody under one roof. Nobody's remember anything. And besides which, Bob Greenblatt, when he has his up front, there's no press hospitality. It's like a Yom Kippur up front. You don't get a drop of water. When Bob had her NBC cable, that was a soiree, Rick. That made it all worthwhile being in this business.
And by the way, we should point out Bob Bakish is the head of Viacom, chief executive officer. And, you know, we've been looking at this core six, you know, Nickelodeon, Comedy Central, BET, Nick Jr., MTV, et cetera. And, again, MTV did not do a press event. they used to do an upfront event for years. Comedy Central, the great one a couple of years ago at Town Hall, featuring Trevor Noah and the great Tammy Shuren, the town of the time. It's just so haphazard. If you don't want to do it, fine, but do something for the press. Don't just do a press release. Get the word out some way so that we can tell the public here's what's going on, especially when, for example, with the New Front, you have Hulu, which does a great event every year, follows it up in Madison Square, now the Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden, follows it up with a press event, which I know is absolutely excellent. You get the chance to meet the talent. You get the chance to meet the production teams, people like Bruce Merritt, who won the Emmy Award, and the Peabody Award recently for The Handmaid's Tale, which I think is going to be another possibility for a shoe-in for it could repeat very well as Best Drama Series later this summer for the Emmys when the nominations come out. You had U2, which I thought really put itself up for grabs at Radio City Music Hall. I thought they switched up the format where they had all the announcements in the first hour, then they went all entertainment, and it was sensational with Ariana Grande finishing it off with her big hits, including No Tears Left to Cry. That woman is a stunner, and I tell you, YouTube knows how to do it. Hulu knows how to do it. Refinery 29, I thought, was a very exciting upfront at Town Hall. Watch out, because they've got a new service that's premiering this fall called Channel 29. I thought the New Front this year was pretty good, even though I think the Interactive Ad Bureau needs to give out press passes rather than have reporters like Roy and myself call or email up each individual company and then find out half the companies don't respond.
Right.
You're 100% right on this. I mean, it's like a needle in a haystack.
I think when you don't do that, you miss out.
Exactly.
Well, right. I mean, it's like a needle in a haystack. YouTube. You know, how can the average person know who to get a hold of in the YouTube communications department? Good luck on that.
Right. And that, I've got another question that I want to ask. I'm going to start with Simon on this. Before I do, I'm going to circle back to two points you made there, Lloyd. First of all, props to you. I'm going to use as a descriptor from now on places where I don't get fed or anything to drink as a Yom Kippur thing. I'm going to steal that from you. That was a great one. Number two.
You have my permission. By the way, I told that to Martin Greenblatt, so I'm not even talking behind his back. I told him that. To his credit, he takes it pretty well. He doesn't. He does have a sense of humor.
That was amazing. Also, you said you didn't get invited to the Nickelodeon one. I will forego the layup joke about a restraining order against you by one of the child stars.
I'm no Luke Heimlich, if that's what you're doing.
Oh, by the way, Rick and Lloyd, that Nickelodeon upfront event, which was done at the Palace Theater, where SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical, was playing, I thought was very well handled. It was the opening one of the season. They did a fantastic job. SpongeBob SquarePants, by the way, got a bunch of Tony nominations. Did win one for sound design. Wish it won more. Terrific show. And I'll tell you, and it was 2 years ago beforehand that Nick Williams started their upfront with sort of the table read version of that opening number. And then to see it a couple years later in full blast was marvelous. And somebody should get Yolanda Adams, the great gospel singer, her own show on television. She's an extraordinary talent, and it's amazing to me that she only does guest shots and nobody has put her up for an original series.
You're right. Great talent. Right. No question about it. But the question that I was going to pose, I'm going to ask you this, Simon. I'll start with you on this, is, again, this being sort of an extraordinary moment in America, that when you think that culturally the polarization out there can't get any more, we've seen obviously over the last 2 years really what is possible, and when you go to TV, late night in particular becoming the partisan battlefield that it really never was until about a year or two ago. So I'm curious at something like the upfronts, where when you're trying to reach advertisers, and it's going to be more of a unifying moment than it may be in general in television at the time, how did the polarization that we see right now and that has leaked onto television so much, especially in recent years, how did that manifest itself, if at all, at the upfronts and new fronts?
It's interesting. It didn't, for the most part, except for one, the Turner event, which was one of the best. Turner knows how to do a multi-network event better than most, even though they do, I think, downplay Cartoon Network and Boomerang and Adult Swim to some degree. But I thought that they handled it very, very well, because they try to keep it light. And I think the fact you have like Conan O'Brien and Anderson Cooper and Shaquille O'Neal together, or Samantha or Snoop Dogg, for example, from The Joker's Wild, wrapping it up with a song that probably would not have been sung at upfronts earlier. I think they have a way to do it in such a way that it doesn't come off as polarizing.
Interesting. What's your sense of it, Lloyd, when you're looking at events like this? Because, again, it wouldn't necessarily surprise me that you don't get as much polarization at something like this because, again, that is something that can kind of get in the way of the bottom line. But then again, in television in recent years, they haven't necessarily felt that it's gotten in the way of the bottom line. And some of the late-night TV shows that have gone that way have been pretty profitable. So as far as striking that balance, Lloyd, how do you see it from a TV business perspective?
Well, again, keep in mind where the upfronts are taking place. They're taking place in very blue New York City.
Yes.
Now, I have to admit, I was not at, for full disclosure, I was not at CBS, so I didn't see Stephen Colbert come out. So I have to assume he at least had to throw one Trump joke out there.
Sure.
Jimmy Kimmel did throw a couple out, but nothing. Actually, compared to what he does on what you see almost every night, it was actually fairly tame. Even Samantha Bee, and I was with Simon at the Turner, was fairly mild. It was kind of what you would predict. It was not, if you're looking for the Million Women's March, that wasn't it. It wasn't happening there. It was actually fairly polite. I mean, no one's going to come out and make, you're not going to get a Miller to come out and make fun of the Democrats. That wasn't going to happen. But
right.
It was kept fairly light. And, you know, let's face it, even Republicans can admit that Trump does kind of invite this.
Sure.
I mean, we can be honest about this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that would be denying the obvious, I think, in terms of looking at this. But in terms of a lot of the diverse subjects that we've hit thus far, I want to kind of just kind of cast my net wide here as we're circling back around here. So, again, I'll start this cycle with you, Simon. Anything we didn't talk about yet that you feel was pretty noteworthy from this year's cycle of the New Fronts and Upfronts?
I think one thing is what we are going to be seeing from here on in, what Netflix is doing, what Amazon is doing, what Apple will be doing once they get into the ball game, and what Disney is going to do once they acquire 21st Century Fox. I thought the Justice Department ruling, by the way, today was a big step forward for Disney in getting the 21st Century Fox assets, as well as what happens to the rest of Fox when that breakup happens if things go the way they're going sometime next year. It is very clear that everybody is stepping up their ball game. Netflix is stepping it up. They are putting pedal to the metal. The new shows they've got coming up look really good. I think the big deals that they've got with Shonda Rhimes and Ryan Murphy and the Obamas and Jenji Kohan, etc., are going to pay off in dividends. You now have Jennifer Salke, the former NBC Entertainment head, now in charge of Amazon Studios. She is definitely riding the ship up in terms of the quality of shows that they want to do. I think Marvelous Mrs. Maisel with Rachel Brosnahan is going to be a major Emmy winner come this fall, as it was a Peabody winner a few weeks ago. And then you have Apple, which now has an Oprah Winfrey deal and has a whole bunch of shows that they're out to do. We still have to see what's going on with Apple. And then you have Disney, which I think is going to do a lot more original programming than you think. And there's another factor, too. Facebook Watch. Keep your eye on this. Facebook Watch could be the real sleeper. If any of their new scripted, they're doing scripted shows, including a batch of shows that are being done by Paul Lee, the former head of ABC Entertainment. He now has his own new studio. He's doing a new series with Catherine Zeta-Jones during her first TV series, scripted series role ever. And if these new series on Facebook Watch take off, I think Mark Zuckerberg or whoever and Sheryl Sandberg and company are going to turn the dollar amount on in terms of how much they spend on Facebook Watch. This could be the real sleeper of the bunch, by the way.
Very much so. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you know, tying it to what I had said before, for anybody that watched this past winter, the limited WWE series Mixed Match Challenge on there, yep, my boy Ryan Ward is the lead writer on that, and it was awesome. There was one week I texted him after the show. I was like, how did you get me to care about those four guys for 20 minutes? That was amazing. You are a miracle worker. So, yeah, Facebook Watch has certainly got some interesting programming and will continue to do so. I'll turn to you, Lloyd, and ask you the question as far as just wide-ranging here. Anything we didn't get to yet that you thought was noteworthy?
Well, yeah, a couple things. One, ESPN, we're talking about Disney before, they had a kind of a rough time because John Skipper obviously had to step down, so you had a new president in place there, Jimmy Pitaro. They were trying to remind people that they were the first at everything with sports. I mean, I'm not sure how true that is. And they're going to do a number of little, like, mini basketball documentaries in the fall. I thought that was, you know, kind of an interesting take. They tried to play up the Get Up, the morning show a bit, give that a little love, which has been struggling badly. I mean, that's a story that no one's really been writing, but they've invested millions into that show. They they broke up their successful radio team of Mike and Mike for it, and it just, the payoff just isn't there. There could be some real changes there come the fall.
I can understand that, yeah. And you got a couple of high-paid people on there, all three of them, as the core members of that set. And, yeah, in terms of justifying those salaries, not necessarily doing it, really not doing it at all at this point from a bottom-line perspective. But
Rick, here's another surprise for you. What comes out of AT&T now that they have Time Warner in their stable? I did a commentary a week or so ago about the fact that I think of all the things they could do now that they have Time Warner and all that content, Warner Brothers, HBO, etc., there's one service that doesn't get talked about that could be a real sleeper, and that is Audience. It used to be called the Audience Network. Before that, Channel 101. This was the service that got Friday Night Lights back on the air when NBC canceled it. It got Damages back on the air when FX canceled that show. In the last year, they've come up with a bunch of interesting programs like Ice from Anton Fuqua, Mr. Mercedes, who I thought was one of the sleeper shows of last year, from David Kelly. It's coming back, by the way, in August. And I think that if they play their cards right, Audience Network could go beyond their current distribution, which is currently DirecTV, DirecTV Now, and the AT&T Ubers cable system. If they decide to really beef up that network with original programs, there's a new show, Condor, by the way, which is off the running. There's some pretty good reviews for people who covered it. If they decide to really make that a new source of programming from Time Warner, Warner Media, that's the new version of Time Warner, Warner Media, and they decide to get Charter and Cox and Dish and all the other multi-channel distributors on board, Audience Network could be a real sleeper.
Wow.
They certainly set it up press releases, so I tend to agree. Hey, you know, so we forgot to talk about the CW. I mean, normally this is always a teenage network. I got to tell you, I was impressed with some of their programs. They have one called All American, which is kind of like Friday Night Lights meets Beverly Hills 90210, which I thought was kind of an interesting amalgam. And the best, I got to tell you, Rick, the best, yes, what is the best show? I think it's a mid-season show called In the Dark. Sabra, who's the lead actress? She's a very attractive lady who plays a blind person who tries to solve a murder. And it takes place in Chicago. I thought it was very gritty. It's not what you'd expect of a CW.
No, you don't, Lloyd. And I'll say something on All American in a second. But I think In the Dark would be a real sleeper, in part because it was based on an actual CW public service project involving Guy Dorf. And decided to turn it into a series. I think this could be a real sleeper. I think the woman who plays the blind character could be an Emmy Award nominee next year. And I said that to Mark Cutterway, the head of CW, at that event. I was really impressed with that, and also impressed with All American, which is a show taking place in Los Angeles, has a Friday Night Lights kind of feel, like the cast very much, like the producers. And let's also give credit to CW for one of the big sleeper shows of this past season, Black Lightning from the Achilles, one of the best duos in TV production. The folks behind Being Mary Jane, the new show Love Is, that just premiered next week on the Oakland Free Network. Black Lightning was a marvelous show. I thought the lead actor is great. The cast is terrific. It has a great social mess as well. And it's one of the best superhero shows that's on television in a long time. So bravo to CW for putting it together. And give credit to Mark, by the way, for the production team, the filming team, for in the last couple of years, putting together some really outstanding, even shows that did not make it, like Life Sentence. So I thought it was a good try. With Lucy Hale of Pretty Little Lies fame, we're giving them a shot. And I think In the Dark, I think that gets a great time period, and it gets the critics behind it. I think that show could make some waves.
Well, I agree. Rick, if you want to, my worst show that I saw, we got to have a little fun with this.
Yeah.
The worst of the new shows.
Okay.
Simon, I don't know if you have your favorite. I have one that I'm going to throw out here. New Amsterdam on NBC. Tell me if you've heard this one before, Rick. Urban hospital, actually in this case New York City, where the head doctor or administrator doesn't care about finances or anything else. He just wants to give the best patient care, no matter how many bad guys try to stop him. I it was so cliche, I couldn't stop laughing when I saw the trailer.
Wow. Well,
I heard some good things about that show, and I was looking forward to it because it was going to be shot in New York.
Well, I agree. Listen, I can't be provincial. But, Simon, did you see the trailer? Tell me I'm wrong in what I'm describing.
Nope, not at all.
By the way, you know, I know this is not really for the upfront, but one question I asked Channing Dungey last year at the ABC TCA Day. On Thursday nights, tomorrow night, ABC has brought back some of the best 70s game shows. They revived, and they've been doing this for a couple of years, Match Game with Alec Baldwin, and The Gong Show. I think we critics helped save The Gong Show because they didn't renew that so quickly. A lot of us made the case to Dungey that this was fun programming. We love the Chuck Barris. I think that homage to the late Mr. Barris. And it was funny. It's low. It's inexpensive programming. Frankly, I'm surprised that networks haven't tried to bring back game shows, not just prime time, but even back day parts, because it's inexpensive and people love them. That's the one part of television I don't quite get. Simon, you'll have to explain it to me, why the game shows have not taken part again in broadcast television, except for the kind of cases I just mentioned.
I have a couple of thoughts about that. First of all, I would love to see that happen, both daytime and prime time.
Sure.
CBS credit for continuing on with Let's Make a Deal, which is going into season number 10, by the way, with Wayne Brady, who won the Emmy Award for daytime.
There you go, and Price is Right, yep.
And deserved it. And the Price is Right going to year 48. Mike Richards is the executive on both shows. I've had him on my program a number of times. He's marvelous. His team is really terrific. They get it. And I love Pyramid and Celebrity Family Feud and so on. I think with daytime, the problem is there's so much syndication going on, and local stations around the country are doing more and more local news in time periods I think would accommodate game shows, that it's very difficult for a new game show to break through. There was one that did this year called Funny You Should Ask with Byron Allen. I liked it. Joe Kelly, by the way, is a game show host star in the making. I think GSN should do more in terms of original game shows. They just started one called America Says, which is a daytime show at 5 o'clock. By the way, GSN is another network that does not, the last couple of years, has not done an event here in New York. I think they should get that back and doing it. I love some of the shows like Idiot Snack Judgment, is a show they did with the Sinclair Station with David Alan Greer. They need to step it up in terms of more original game show production. And I'd love to see some game shows. By the way, we have Beat the Clock.
Yep.
That's
fantastic.
And let's not forget, Double Dare is back on the air weeknights at 8 on Nickelodeon. And I talked to Mark Summers, the original host, who's back on that program as executive producer and co-announcer, if you will. Liza Koshy, the YouTube star who does it, is terrific. The first episode on Monday night did very, very well. I think Nickelodeon has a new winner in the return of Double Dare.
If it's on Nickelodeon, I will not write about it.
Fair enough, and I'll tell you but what.
Summers is wonderful, and he's so happy that the reaction to the show has been really outstanding. They're doing a Keenan and Kel reunion show. It's going to be an hour episode coming up in the next week or so. But I would like to see more game shows revive. Bring back Password. Bring back Video Village. Bring back some of the shows.
Bring back Hollywood Squares. I mean, you're talking about an easy concept. I'm surprised that one hasn't made a comeback.
Yeah.
And bring on some shows, by the way, that were hits in the 50s and 60s that really deserve to be back, like The Name's the Same, or shows like Concentration, Word for Word, Video Village. I think they're a great show to bring back. It was a very action-oriented show, a lot of fun. Bring back the quizzes. Let's see 21 again, but let's see in a way that really challenges people. I think there's an appetite for really good game shows, and of course, by the way, Millionaire is still at it 10 years in syndication, despite the fact that it doesn't get much play.
That's right.
Game station still running.
That's right. And, gentlemen, I tell you what, I can't put a wrap on this thing without getting back to Lloyd, my keen skills at Google Foo. I have uncovered this here. Perry Matfield is playing the lead in The Dark. So,
yes
your rhetorical question has been answered. So she is somebody to keep an eye on in that show. No pun intended, of course, but that will be worth checking out. I will check it out on your recommendation. And, a conversation.
Oh, and, Rick,
yes.
One of the shows I would highly recommend people check out now is on what was YouTube Red, now YouTube Premium, Cobra Kai.
Yes.
The Karate Kid.
That's very good.
It turned out really super. It's been renewed for a second season. Ralph Macchio, who was my sister's big crush in her high school and college days, and William Zabka, I still remember as Edward Woodward's son on The Equalizer. God rest Edward Woodward's soul. One of the best actors I ever met. One of the great actors, frankly. Who should have won an Emmy Award for that role, playing Rob McCall, a program that really was responsible for New York television coming back in the mid-1980s. Catch Cobra Kai. It's a terrific show, and I think it's an example of where YouTube is going to go in terms of doing more original filming.
Well, outstanding as always from both of you, gentlemen, the yin and yang, as it were, of the New York media scene. Good friends, Simon Applebaum and Lloyd Carroll. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here. I knew this would be awesome as always. Really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Lloyd. It's always a pleasure. Take care.
I'll see you soon. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being part of this. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 1001.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.